Hey everyone, welcome to the Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Audrey.
And on this podcast, we share the messy, honest, unfiltered, and not so curated parts of our life.
Think of this podcast as a bunch of bloopers with some truth bombs sprinkled throughout.
That's right. We're going to be taking you behind the scenes of our daily routines, our social media feeds, and what you may or may not have seen on TV.
We're going to be talking relationships, family, faith, business, basically whatever we are learning about, fighting about, or laughing about lately.
We're going to be sharing our daily life, our struggles, successes, and our roses and thorns from each week.
And we don't want this podcast to just be about us, so we're also going to go behind the scenes with some of the people who inspire us the most.
We hope this podcast feels like you're joining us for a campfire.
Come hang out.
Welcome back to Behind the Scenes Podcast. We are going to be doing another reading today. Today we're going to be reading A Creative Type of Love from A Love Letter Life. And this is probably my favorite chapter. I know a couple podcasts ago we said, The Principle of Sharing was our favorite, but I think this chapter is my favorite. And after listening to it myself on audiobook, because with all these plane rides, I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy the audiobook and listen to it myself. So I did that, and I listened to this chapter, and I was like, okay, this is probably my favorite chapter in the book. So same with Audrey. I think Audrey would agree with me. Creative Type of Love, probably our favorite chapter. So really excited to play this for you guys. And if you're enjoying these readings here on Thursdays, I encourage you to go get the audiobook. I know Amazon's still doing 55% off, which is crazy. We don't know what they're doing. I think they're just trying to steal the market. Walmart price matched them as well. So 55% off, you can get the audiobook. Pretty amazing deal while it's still going. So there's that. And it's just me doing this intro today because Audrey's packing because we got some more travel coming up. And although we love this process, we love meeting everyone, and it's super fun, man, I think we're at the point where we're like, okay, ready to be done, ready to be home, and get back into our routine. So all that to be said, we're having a lot of fun, you guys. This book launch, as we've mentioned on social media, it's just been way more than we could have ever imagined, and we're just so thankful for you guys, thankful for the support and the way this book has been received. So New York Times bestseller. Wow. That came out of nowhere, I feel. I mean, sure, we tried our hardest to do the best we could, but we're just blown away. So thank you guys. The response has just been more than we could have ever asked for or hoped for. So pretty excited. Okay, well, without further ado, because it's just me and you probably don't want to hear me ramble anymore, we're going to dive in and read to you A Creative Type of Love. Hope you enjoy this. And if you have been enjoying these, as I mentioned, go get the audiobook, still on sale. And you'll love it. So, okay, diving in. Here we go. 4. A Creative Type of Love. Jeremy. The night I met Audrey, I drove home more slowly than usual, lost in deep thought. I felt caught between wonder and uncertainty as I tried to make sense of the girl I'd just met. By the time I pulled into the gravel driveway at the farm, I had replayed the night several times and was imagining what might lie ahead. The night we met changed my life. Love always does. And from there, love did what it does best. It compelled me into a pursuit that was full of creativity, adventure, and sacrifice. As I mentioned earlier, the pursuit was on. The first gift I ever made Audrey, I gave to her at Christmas the year we met. Audrey was home from university for the winter break, and I was finishing up my last class of the term at the local community college. We made plans to see each other, and I was eager to make her something special. I didn't know what she might like, so I built something I knew I would like, a lamp made out of an old kerosene lantern. I'd always wanted one, and Audrey was my motivation to finally tackle the project. I drilled some holes, installed a socket for the light bulb, and wired in the switch. To my delight, it worked. I thought it was awesome, and I had a hunch she would too. On the underside of the base, I wrote, "To Audrey from Jeremy, Christmas 2010, Jeremiah 10:23.
Walking up to Audrey's house, my palms began to sweat, and I suddenly felt like a weirdo. This is embarrassing. I'm going to scare her away, and we had just become friends. And besides, this lamp is cool. Maybe I should just keep it. I imagined what her mom might think. Who is this weirdo you barely know who's suddenly giving you extravagant handmade gifts? The fear was real. I turned back toward the car to put the gift in the trunk and save myself the humiliation. I had only taken a few steps when I stopped in the street. What kind of story do I want? Do I want to tell the story of how I cowardly refrained from giving Audrey her first gift? Or the story of how I heroically overcame doubt and gave Audrey one of her favorite gifts ever? This inner monologue was all the courage I needed to turn back around, gift in hand, and walk through that big brick archway, jaw clenched and heart racing. I pressed the doorbell with a sweaty fingertip. Almost immediately, the door opened, and there stood Audrey's dad. I walked in a bit awkwardly, holding the lamp behind my back, and headed straight to the kitchen where I could hear Audrey and her mom talking. I didn't waste a minute of time. I pulled out the unwrapped treasure from behind my back and said, "I made this for you. Merry Christmas." Audrey and her mom both looked at it blankly and then looked back at me. "What do you mean you made it?" her mom said with a puzzled look on her face. "I mean I made it," I said. "What's the cord for?" Audrey asked. "It's a lamp," I said, laughing. "Let me show you." I plugged it in and it lit up, and so did their faces. They were surprised, in a good way. Audrey loved it. I got the idea that nobody had ever made her something so sophisticated before. She said it was the coolest gift anyone had ever given her. I think Audrey would have loved it even if it had just been an old rusty lantern I found in one of the barns. She took it back to school with her and set it up on the nightstand by her bed. Today, it resides on a table in our entryway. I got to keep it, after all. Not long after, it was summertime, and I was still very much in the friend zone. Audrey had mentioned that she had always wanted a one-way sign. So, one night, I went to what my friends and I called the sign yard. It was a place filled with construction junk, broken traffic cones, and the occasional road sign. After an hour of hunting, I found one. On the back, I inscribed a poem I'd written and then gave the sign to her just in time for her to take it back to school in the fall. I hoped it would remind her of me whenever she saw it. It was another winner in the creative gift category. I pursued Audrey with unique gifts, but I also tried to be creative in other ways, such as planning trips, attending events, and creating adventures. Then, there was the time I did something I never thought I'd ever do for a girl. I ran. It was June in Helvetia. The Helvetia Half Marathon is one of the largest races in the state, and also what Helvetia is best known for besides Roloff Farms and the local tavern. Event organizers were setting up traffic cones and blocking off roads to mark the route. People from all over the city were gearing up for the run, and Audrey was one of them. I was not a runner, but put me in a soccer game and I could run until I yacked. At least in soccer, there's a point to the running. Long distance running just for the sake of running was not my thing. No, thank you. A few weeks earlier, Audrey had jokingly asked if I wanted to join her in the race. I thought long and hard about it for about half a second and then declined. But on the morning of the big race, I woke up earlier than usual with a distinct feeling in my gut. If I do not go on this run, it will be something we missed out on. I will have chosen the mundane, a few extra hours of sleep, over the memory. I want to be with her, even if it means misery for 13 miles. Again, I asked, what kind of love story do I want? And again, the answer was clear. I jumped out of bed and scavenged through the closet for a pair of running shoes. All I found was an old pair of indoor soccer shoes that were torn along the side. Throwing them back into the closet, I spotted my Vibram Five Fingers in the corner. Yes! If the name doesn't sound familiar, you might know them by sight. They're the embarrassingly ugly rubberized shoes that look like bare feet. I wiggled them on, grabbed a soccer jersey, and headed down to the starting point at Hillsborough Stadium in hopes of finding Audrey. I parked my car and joined a mob of more than 3,000 runners, all of us trying to find the right place to line up. There were signs with numbers indicating estimated pace, and everyone was supposed to line up according to their running speed. Not knowing what I was doing, I decided to stand next to a sign marked 10M+, indicating a pace of just over 10 minutes per mile. I scanned the crowd for Audrey. I bet she'll be surprised to see me. Bang! The gun went off and the race began. I took off, hoping I'd see her during the race. By a few miles in, I thought I was doing pretty well. It wasn't until I was approaching the halfway point that I realized there was no way I was going to see her. This was a morale killer. I considered hightailing it from my bed by cutting through the field to my left, as the farm lay just beyond it, but I didn't. If I can't see her, maybe I can at least impress her by finishing. For love, I trudged on. Somehow, despite running in Vibram Five Fingers and having never trained, I finished the race. I was hobbling painfully back to my car when I heard someone call out my name. Sitting on the grass nearby were a few of Audrey's cross-country teammates. When I asked where Audrey was, they said she already left. I found out they had started the race standing under the sub-7-minute mile sign and finished in the top 1%. Audrey had finished 7th overall and taken 1st in her age bracket. We chatted for a few minutes before I said goodbye and continued hobbling to my car. I was glad that at least I now had witnesses who could verify my story of accomplishment. Audrey had invited me to attend her sister's graduation party later that evening. Even though I didn't know anyone, I decided to go. I thought it would be a good chance to get to know her family, secretly hoping they would encourage Audge to date me. But, of course, I was mostly there for Audge and the food. I told Audge the story of the race, and she was shocked. Laughing at my efforts, she fixed me up with a plate of Bodhi post-race miracle food for my recovery. Juicy ribs, cheesy pasta, and homemade berry cobbler. On the one hand, running the race was pointless because I never did get to see Audrey. On the other hand, hearing her laugh and answering her questions about how I did it made it more than worthwhile. I mean, she had to be impressed, right? The half marathon became part of our story. To this day, we joke that I ran a half marathon just for her. The rest of the summer, I swapped my Vibrams for a bicycle and rode alongside her while she trained for cross-country season. Sometimes, my pursuit seemed pointless because of the walls Audrey had up. After finishing a long ride, she often just said goodbye and left. I would drive home wondering if I was wasting my time. But love is persistent, creative, and sometimes crazy. So, I was determined to keep riding as long as she kept running. After Audrey went back to school in the fall, we only saw each other when she came home on occasional weekends. As the winter break approached, I had already set my sights on our second summer together. I wanted it to be the summer I made Audrey fall in love with me. To lay the groundwork, I decided I needed to ask Audge out on an official date during the winter break. It had been almost a year since our blind date. I had been wanting to do this for a while, but I was worried it might scare her away. But after talking with her best friend about it, I deemed it a perfect time to do so. I wanted to change the expectations for our upcoming summer. As if it wasn't obvious enough already, I wanted her to know I was crazy about her. After pacing the lawn for 30 minutes, I finally made the call. In a shaky voice, I nervously told her I wanted to take her out on an official date when she was home at break. I was so relieved when she said yes, but just as we were hanging up from our awkward conversation, I heard a bunch of girls burst out laughing. Evidently, I had called her while she was in the car with all her friends, and she conveniently neglected to mention she had me on speakerphone. I felt a twinge of embarrassment, but not for long. I was pretty sure the camaraderie of her friends had factored in my favor. It felt like winter break took forever to arrive, but when it did, I was ready. Picking her up in Oso, I took her for a long drive through the hills of Portland, eventually ending up at Piddock Mansion, a beautiful, historic house museum overlooking the city. The museum was closed, but after talking as we sat at a picnic table and then touring the gardens, we got back in the car and headed for Rock Creek Tavern, an old barn-turned restaurant tucked away in the Helvetia countryside. Rock Creek always has a fire going in the big stone fireplace and smooth music playing that complements the dim lights and smoky atmosphere. We sat in what they called the dating booth, yes, really, under the stairs. We had a great time, and our conversation was filled with laughter and plans for the upcoming summer. While we were finishing up our meal, an older couple walked by our table as they were leaving and said, "Thank you." When we asked what for, they smiled and said, "For being in love, and for not being on your phones." We were embarrassed because we were far from exchanging "I love yous," but we never let on. I appreciated the couple saying that because it gave Audge all the more reason to fall in love with me. Something inside me burned brighter when things like this happened, and I wanted to believe it was mutual. I was tending the embers of our relationship, and every affirmation felt like a dry cedar log being tossed onto the fire. We ended up staying another hour or so after we finished our meal, enjoying coffee and ice cream while dreaming up summer adventures. We were going to take full advantage of our limited days together, so we wrote down our summer bucket list in my leather moleskin. After winter break, Audrey went back to school, but there was no denying that we had both left a piece of our heart with the other. Throughout the winter and spring, we saw each other a fair amount when Audrey came home from school for a weekend or when I visited my friend Scott in Corvallis, which was really code for visiting Audrey. We mostly hung out in group settings with each other's friends until Audrey was home for summer break, and you already know what happened next, our summer of timelessness. Just as I'd hoped, at the end of our second summer, I asked Audrey to be my girlfriend, and we threw our shoes at the train trestle. Once we started dating long distance, I knew my creative pursuit had to persist for our love to survive. And we both knew our relationship could not thrive on text messages and Skype calls alone. We needed more than that to bridge the gap of 900 miles. As the summer came to an end, we discussed how we'd do this. What would keep two lovers in love, especially at a distance? Our answer? Intentionality, creativity, and faithfulness. Our story felt both effortless and intentional at the same time. Looking ahead, we wanted to continue our creative pursuit. We wouldn't succumb to laziness. We couldn't. That would indeed be the end of us. That's when we decided to write letters. What better way to be intentional than to proclaim the effortful and artful practice used by the romantics of old? Before leaving for my new home, I handed Audrey her first letter with a posture of certainty that we would find a way through this. Upon my arrival in Santa Barbara, the first thing I did was visit an antique store to buy a manual typewriter. I wanted to be able to both hand type and hand write letters to Audrey. The typewriter was hard to use, but it was an intentional choice. Every letter I typed represented an hour, sometimes more, of love I poured into it. I believe that love shows up through its efforts, and I also believe Audrey felt it. We committed to writing letters because they felt real, romantic, and creative. And that was the kind of relationship we wanted. We were also looking ahead in our story, and we liked the idea of one day having a big wooden box full of letters to look back at. One of the things I struggled with most when we were apart was not being able to share experiences with Audrey. In the evenings, I often went for walks around my neighborhood, where the air was filled with the lovely scent of night-blooming jasmine. It's a bushy plant with beautiful white flowers that open only at night when the air is warm. I loved how they glowed beneath the streetlights and danced to the ocean breeze. I tried to describe them to Audrey, but it wasn't the same as sharing the experience with her. In an effort to creatively love her, one night I picked a bunch and tucked them into my next letter. She called me when she opened it and said they smelled even better than I had described them. The smell of night jasmine became one of her favorite smells. Audrey's all into the potions now, essential oils, and has made a roller she calls night jasmine. Whenever I smell it on her, it always triggers waves of nostalgia. Although Audrey had a traditional 3-month summer break, my school terms continued through the summer, with 8-week sessions followed by 2-week breaks. That summer, she got a job working at Anthropology in downtown Portland. At the start of one of my 2-week breaks, I was headed to Portland for some filming. My mom picked me up from the airport and I convinced her to swing by Anthropology on our way home, which was completely out of the way, so I could give Audrey a poem I'd written on my typewriter. When I arrived, Audrey was on her break, so I gave the note to her manager and asked her to pass it along. I'd initially been disappointed, but then decided that the way things worked out was even better. In addition to being more creative, I hoped it would leave her blushing at work and heighten her anticipation of getting home, where I would be waiting for her. When I was back in Santa Barbara, I continued my efforts to find creative ways to express my love. Sometimes, I called local shops in Corvallis and had chocolate or flowers delivered to her house. Other times, I asked her friends to do little favors for me, such as put a note for me in whatever book she was reading at the time. Audrey was also intentional and creative in expressing her love for me. For one of my birthdays, she made a surprise visit to Santa Barbara. She had my roommate James sneak out and pick her up from the airport. It must have been 1 a.m. when she jumped on my bed and yelled, "Surprise! Happy birthday!" James was standing there laughing as he filmed it. I don't wake up easily from sleep, so it took me a moment to realize I wasn't just dreaming. At first, all I could do was repeat a confused, "Audrey?" But when she hugged me and I smelled her perfume, I knew it was real. I felt so loved in that moment. I knew how much effort and planning it must have taken for Audrey to get time away from school and track practice and to coordinate her stay in Santa Barbara, all without me knowing. I was happy to forget school for a few days and explore Santa Barbara with Audrey. This wasn't her first visit, but there was always so much more I wanted to show her each time she came. We drove Blue Moon to the top of the Santa Ynez Mountains for a hike, ate at the iconic Cold Spring Tavern in the hills of Santa Barbara, and visited all my favorite coffee shops. I taught her how to kick a soccer ball and walk a slack line. Sometimes we'd find a good spot at the beach to sit and read together while the crashing waves drowned out everything else. We longed to do even the simplest things side by side. One time, when we were taking an evening barefoot stroll on the beach, Audrey looked at me and said, "Want to go in?" "It's pretty cold," I said, smiling back at her. But before I could weigh the pros and cons of soaking my attire in salt water, she was already running for the waves. I took off after her, and the adrenaline rush kept us warm while the stars began to show. There was something about being with Audrey that made me feel free, and I could sense she felt the same with me. When we finally realized we were freezing, we raced back to the van and wrapped ourselves in beach towels. Audrey put on one of my flannels, and I took her to the only coffee shop in Santa Barbara that was open 24 hours. We got chai tea lattes and talked about how good it felt to just be together. We never took our time with one another for granted. When Audrey returned to school after my birthday visit, I had a strong case of the PABS, an acronym coined by my roommate James that stood for Post-Audrey Blues Syndrome. I was always a little down after having to say goodbye, especially if we didn't know when we were going to see each other next. Those were always the hardest goodbyes, and this was one of those times. It was so much easier when we were together, but being apart forced us to continue seeking more creative ways to love each other. Although the letters were a pillar to our success and creative pursuit, they were not what got us through. The intentionality and patience required to write, send, and wait for them kept us excited. But ultimately, it was not the letters, but our creative pursuit and what that represented.
Audrey. Jeremy and I spent 3 years relentlessly checking our mailboxes. I checked my mailbox like it was the refrigerator, opening it multiple times throughout the day in hopes of finding something that wasn't there the last time I checked. Whenever a letter was there, I felt like I was opening a Willy Wonka chocolate bar with the golden ticket, especially when the letter was one he'd written on his typewriter. I always read the letters multiple times. It took everything in me not to immediately call him to talk about whatever he had written, but I refrained. We wanted to keep some things in writing only, and we didn't want our phone conversations to dilute the content of our letters. The anticipation and emotion wrapped up in our letter writing helped ease the pains of separation, especially when the letters included extras. Jeremy often added poems, photos, scents from Santa Barbara, CDs with his favorite songs, and other small and thoughtful gifts that reminded him of me. I added photos, poems, although they were more comedic than serious, sprayed perfume on my letters, and sent small gifts that reminded me of him. In addition to writing letters, we were constantly thinking of ways to connect and grow in our relationship. We read the same books and listened to the same podcasts so we'd have something to talk about besides what was happening in our days apart. Sometimes we did homework together on Skype. We trudged through our work, stopping every now and then to stare at each other with a longing that ached to our bones. We read books aloud, mostly C.S. Lewis, Francis Chan, and Timothy Keller, and talked about them. When it came to phone calls, we figured out early on that we felt more connected by less frequent and deeper conversations than more frequent and surface-level conversations. Nightly calls to download our days were more frustrating than helpful. We were always distracted by homework, roommates, or cooking dinner, and we couldn't talk long enough to get a good read on each other's emotions. Then we hung up the phone with false assumptions about how the other person was feeling or what they meant by something that was said. My goodness, to this day, we do not recommend dating long distance. It is not for the faint of heart. We accepted that it was actually better for us to go a few days without talking so we could set aside enough time to have a conversation that went beyond just recapping our days. We also made it a point to discuss specific topics during our Skype or phone calls. Sometimes we prayed for each other, planned out what we'd do the next time we were together, or discussed specific events from our past that had shaped us. We were determined to connect even when we felt so disconnected. We were determined to communicate despite our faces freezing on the screen or our calls getting dropped. We knew that persistently and creatively expressing our love would be vital to sustaining our relationship. 1 year, Jeremy was going on a road trip to Utah with all of his friends, and it happened to fall over Valentine's Day. Even though we wouldn't be together, I still wanted to make him feel loved from afar. I decided to send him a giant kiss, metaphorically and literally. I made a batch of the infamous Bodhi Rice Krispie Treats, but instead of spreading them out into a pan to cool, I dumped that sticky mess into a giant funnel. Then I used my hands to sculpt it into the shape of a Hershey's Kiss. Marveling at my cleverness, I painted it in chocolate and covered it with tinfoil. Then I globbed on my signature red lipstick and repeatedly kissed a white strip of paper. This would be the Kisses label protruding from the top. I wrote Jeremy a letter and wrapped everything up in a nice pink and red box. I texted one of his friends and got the address of the place where they would be staying, and then I shipped the box so it would arrive the same day they did. I couldn't wait for him to open it. Jeremy FaceTimed me when he got the box so I could watch him open it. His reaction was exactly what I'd hoped for. He said he felt so loved and valued when he received my gift. Later, he explained that the most meaningful part about the gift wasn't the giant Rice Krispies kiss, but the words of affirmation in my Valentine's card. Believe it or not, I was actually surprised by how much Jeremy appreciated my encouragement. It just seemed like everyone was always complimenting or praising Jeremy for something. His vintage cars, his soccer skills, the things he built, his photography, or something he did or said on TV. Not to mention that all the affirming comments people made on his social media posts were like Red Robin French fries, bottomless. I figured hearing similar compliments from me probably wouldn't mean much to him. I was wrong. Receiving words of encouragement and affirmation from the girl he loved meant more than thousands of compliments from strangers. For Jeremy, a card full of affirmations spoke more I love yous than a gift. As we sought to love each other in more creative and meaningful ways, I suggested we take the love languages test. Both Jeremy and I were familiar with Gary Chapman's book, The Five Love Languages, but neither of us had ever taken the test to determine what our own love languages might be. The five love languages are words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, physical touch. Of course, most of us appreciate receiving love in all five ways, but the test helps to identify our primary love language. Then it describes what it means and suggests how we can use it to connect with others. We took the test while on the phone together and then discussed our results. My top two love languages were tied between quality time and receiving gifts. Jeremy's top two love languages were tied between words of affirmation and physical touch. As we processed our results, we gleaned insights on how to love each other in more creative and specific ways. It changed the way we expressed our love and helped us understand one another better. I became more intentional about deluging Jeremy with affirmation and also about holding his hand and never forgetting to hug goodbye. Jeremy learned how cherished I felt by all of his handmade gifts and surprise letters. He also learned how much I valued spending intentional quality time with him. Through the love languages test and our discussion of it, we also learned the importance of staying curious about each other. We agreed that no matter how long we had been together, there would always be more we could learn about each other, our likes, our pasts, our day-to-day experiences, our struggles, our triumphs, our fears, our hopes and dreams. We knew this would become increasingly important as our relationship progressed because we would inevitably change and grow over the years. This really excited us and spurred us on in our never-ending study of each other. 1 Peter 3:7 reads, "Husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way." First of all, I don't think there's a woman on the planet who doesn't want the man she loves to understand her. Secondly, misunderstanding so often leads to strife in relationships. I realize that this specific scripture is addressing husbands, but I think it's safe to say that this would be wise practice for wives too. One of the ways we love one another is by seeking to understand one another. We must be willing to keep learning more about the person we love. We must be students of one another, always extending grace, asking questions, and staying curious. The five love languages became our cheat sheet for loving each other creatively and specifically.
Jeremy. One of the best gifts Audrey has ever given me happened in the first year we were married. It started out as a creative idea and ended up giving me far more than she ever could have imagined. Audrey thought it would be fun to give me something different for my birthday. Instead of a tangible gift, she gave me a relationship. I had been following an entrepreneur online for a while, and she knew I admired his writings and work. So she reached out to mutual friends and scheduled a meeting with him. Audge convinced me we were going paragliding, but first we'd go out to lunch. As we walked up to the restaurant, a man approached me. Recognizing him, I said, "Dale?" "Jeremy, it's nice to meet you," he said. Shocked and confused, I looked over at Audge, who belted out a big surprise. We spent the afternoon talking about Jesus, biblical living, and our cultural moment. I drove home that day feeling encouraged, challenged, and curious about the things we had talked about. Audrey had no idea her gift would one day turn into a mentor and a great friend. Truly, her gift turned into more than she could have imagined. During the first year of our marriage, we were living in Los Angeles, and Audrey had a laborious job that required her to wake up at 2:45 a.m. every day. Yes, you heard that correctly. Commuting halfway across L.A., which is a job in and of itself, she had to convince grumpy store managers to buy her company's product, wine. This job drained her, both emotionally and physically. Audrey was burnt out. Knowing her love language, I knew she needed to get out of the routine for a minute, have fun, and spend some quality alone time, just the two of us. When she got home, I had a route all picked out and the motorcycle loaded up with our running gear. When she saw it, she gave a tired smile and dropped her shoulders in relief. We rode the Fox, our Honda CB360T motorcycle, up Laurel Canyon Boulevard and over to Mulholland Drive as we leisurely found our way to the Hollywood Reservoir, a place Audge had never been to. We ran a lap around and went out for ice cream afterward. On the ride back, I noticed she was hugging me extra tight. Creative love requires thoughtfulness, and we believe, from experience, that the effort is totally worth it. We all have a creative side and a love story that is waiting to find its best expression. God the Creator made you and me in His image, Genesis 1:27, Isaiah 64:8. That means we have divine creative juices hardwired into our very DNA. The single fact that no two human beings looked or act the same is overwhelmingly magnificent and immensely creative. It's proof that you, yes, you, are creative and that your love story can be creative too. Audge and I believe that pursuing a creative love story is one of the best ways to put the love of Christ on display. Every time you express your love in a meaningful and creative way, you can confidently say, "There's more where that came from." Because God's power at work in us is able to do immeasurably more than we ask or imagine, Ephesians 3:20. All this to say, figure out your love languages, surprise each other, swim in the ocean, make thoughtful gifts, do something spontaneous, get a babysitter, get out from behind your phones, and get creative. Pursue a love that tells a story. Whether you are currently single and in pursuit, dating and falling in love, engaged and preparing for marriage, or married and protecting your promise, you have a unique love story. Keep on creatively writing it.
Man, I just love that chapter. I hope you guys liked it as well. Just thought of this. Let us know at Behind the Scenes Podcast on Instagram what your guys' favorite chapter is. I'd be curious to hear which one is resonating with people. So join the conversation there. We should have posted a photo today, and you can just do it there in the comments, and we'll be talking to you guys about that. So that being said, we are going to be in Seattle this weekend. And we're going to be at Fort Lewis doing a signing. We're going to hit up a Barnes & Noble, a Costco, I believe. And so come on out and meet us. If you're in the Seattle area or surrounding area, we'd love to meet you guys. That is one of the highlights of, I mean, it is the highlight of all this traveling, but it's one of the highlights of what we do is when we get to meet you guys. So come on out, say hi, get assigned a book. We love that, and it makes it all worth it for us. And we're going to be posting on our Instagram stories exactly kind of where these events are and the dates and all of that. But if you want to check out the schedule, you can just go to aloveletterlife.com. That is the book website. And then at the top menu, you can click tour, and then that'll take you to the tour section, and it'll give you all the dates, all the times, all the specifics. And then each spot has a button, and that'll actually take you to a Facebook page where you can pre-buy a ticket, blah, blah, blah. All the details are there. Again, aloveletterlife.com. Click tour. It'll take you straight to where all the information is at. All right. So again, just me doing this outro. Audrey sends her love. And yeah, guys, tune in next Tuesday. And yeah, we got another fun podcast for you guys. It's an interview, I believe. We're having a lot of fun doing these interviews. And yeah, if you're enjoying this podcast, we love it. If you, we would love it if you'd share it with people. Again, if you do share it, we buy 5 of you coffee every single Tuesday and Thursday. So if you share this to your stories, you tag us and Behind the Scenes Podcast, we pick 5 of you, we send you a Starbucks gift card, we buy you coffee. So again, we're doing that every single Tuesday and Thursday. So don't forget about that. And also, if you guys want to leave a review, it really, really helps, because a lot of these people we're getting on, they've got agents, and they get on podcasts with a specific amount of data and stats. And so the more reviews we get helps all the algorithms. Everyone's happy. And so if you wouldn't mind taking 5 seconds to do that, you can just click the stars. Really, it's that easy. But if you wanted to write something, that'd be awesome. So thank you, guys. We appreciate you. Always look forward to talking to you. We'll see you next week.